across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, I don't know how exactly this happened, but we are halfway through the month of May already. It's Wednesday morning, May 50th, 2024. Greg Bach joins us from Waukesha, and meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here with us as well. Brittany Wolfile joins us from Menominee Falls in just a moment to talk about an unfortunate episode taking place in their community. And then our homeroom segment, we talked to a superintendent from the Palmyra District about electric school bus use on the rise. Coming up later this hour, Todd Alba as well. But Ms. Merlot, it is going to be... It looks to be at least another carbon copy of yesterday, which an hour ago, the show started with me looking like that cartoon dog, you know, from my childhood where you feed it some treats and it just kind of floats up in the air and gently falls to the ground. And that's because all the lilacs are in bloom around here. And it is just gorgeous. It's gorgeous. I love it.
That is beautiful. I love Greg's face right now. He is just like giving you this look, I think.
I mean, I don't know why I'm making the face.
What just happened?
We were both talking about this, the fact that we both love lilac bushes, but I now have this image of him smelling an apple pie on a windowsill and just floating. Oh,
just, yeah.
Like a cartoon.
That. Yeah, because, you know, you can't be a yes. cranky old man all the time.
Well, Pat,
sometimes
also.
You have to stop and smell the lilacs.
Pat, it's also May. It's the 15th.
Be May.
So I mean, it's
so we get to use that for a couple more weeks too.
I know. I'm gonna milk this one, buddy.
So Brittany, to what degree is today that carbon copy, and then what's coming in on its heels?
Yes, absolutely. So temperature-wise, sunshine-wise, we're on repeat, upper 60s to low 70s once again today. The only difference is it's going to be a bit windier, right? We're going to have gusts up to about 20 to 30 miles per hour at times as this system approaches. So we are looking at rain headed on in, especially to the northern parts of the state overnight tonight. And then we will see scattered showers and some light thunderstorms as we go through our day tomorrow. But just enjoy today, like you said. Get out and smell the lilacs. Enjoy the sunshine while we have it. We will get some more sunshine on Friday, but also more rain into the weekend.
Smell the lilacs and the freshly mowed grass. Rob tells us good morning from Tigerton, where it's sunny and 43. Great outdoors working weather mowing in the Wittenberg area. Pat, love the show. I have the Civic Media app on my phone. I listen to use when I'm not on my lawn tractor. Proper use of the word use for Eastern Wisconsin. You get 2 points for that as well, Rob. Thank you very much.
Rob, can I borrow that lawn tractor, buddy? I need it. I need heavy duty right now.
Brittany, do you have like lawn and garden work to do, or are you free from those responsibilities this time of year?
Right now, currently, I am free of those responsibilities, but I enjoy those responsibilities. I love cutting the grass and gardening, too. So,
well, there you go, Greg. We found our weekend help, finally.
Brittany, I live in Kenosha around the north side. Just bring whatever equipment you can. It's going to be a long day.
All right, Rob, we're going to need your lawnmower. Yep. Let's go.
That's good. So from Tigerton, from Wausau, from Chippewa Falls, they all converge on Greg's yard. We're here for you, buddy.
Thanks.
Thank you, Brittany.
Teamwork. You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Talk to you later on. Our number here is 855-75-CIVIC if you want to call or text the show. Again, we'll be talking more about electric school buses and school districts in Wisconsin coming up in a bit. We'll update you on the Donald Trump trial happening in New York. Right now, I want to bring in Brittany Wolfile from Menominee Falls, who's been a previous guest on the show when running for village president, and joins us now to talk about unfortunate events there. And I didn't think I was going to be starting this topic until closer to June when Pride Month kicks off, but it looks like a potential Pride Month event is not going to be taking place because of the reaction from some folks. Brittany, good morning. How are you doing?
We're hanging in there. It's been a tumultuous kind of week for us here.
Well, and you're your business is it Batter and Mac Bakery? Do I have that right?
Yep, Batter and Mac in Menominee Falls. Yep.
Okay. And so the headlines that I've been seeing out of Menominee Falls say things like a drag queen story time drew backlash. They were planning to host the Story Hour as a Pride Month fundraiser, but it was met with threats to boycott or even threats of violence, forcing the owners to cancel. Is that pretty well the gist of what happened? Take us through the events.
Yeah. So, you know, we worked last year with a group called Courage MKE. We did a little fundraiser for them in the month of June. And we were in a really small space last year for June. We had like a 300 square foot shop. And so in November, we moved into our new space, which is much bigger. So we were really excited to be able to do more for Courage MKE. They work specifically with youth in the LGBTQ community. They have like transitional homes, housing for kids who've been like maybe kicked out of their home for who they are, whatever their situation is. So we really believe in their mission and we were excited to be able to do more for them. So we had a lineup of events. The first one was going to be June 2nd. It was a drag queen story hour and cupcake decorating. And then we had drag bingo and then this like Chopped style event, like competition with some like kind of local food celebrities from Milwaukee who are going to come and judge. So the first one was the drag story hour. So that was the first one we posted. And immediately people were very upset and leaving comments. And then like phone calls started coming into the shop from blocked numbers. And then a group called Gays for Groomers started attacking us. And then one of our village board members started posting it and lying about the event and telling people to boycott us. So it's been interesting.
To put it politely, that an elected official in your village would be putting up something that would be, you know, critical of a local business. Mm-hmm. Hardly seems like ambassadorial behavior, you know, shall we say. Because again, what I don't want to get lost in the telling of the story here is people hear drag queen story time, which does elicit, you know, feelings of one way or another. But what I don't want missed in here was that this was a fundraiser for a group that helps people who are victimized by the very haters who have now driven you to cancel your event.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. And, you know, and one of the things that happened was this group, Gays for Groomers, which is a hate group. They're not really right. Or gays against groomers. You know, they're not trying to actually help kids. They're not. If you were trying to actually help kids, you would look for groups like Courage MKE, who is actually doing work on the ground helping kids. So Gays for Against Groomers made this post where they took our description of drag bingo, which is an adult event. So it was a little more, you know, risque of a description, you know, more traditional drag performance. And they took that description and applied it to the kids event as though that were the event of our kids event, that, you know, what we were saying about the kids event, which obviously, you know, performers can tailor their performance for the group that they're performing for. So the drag story hour would have been child friendly with some really lovely books. We picked Peanut Goes for the Gold and a book called Perfectly Designed. So really great books about inclusivity and being who you are. Lucinda would have gone by just Lucinda, not his full drag name. And then would have been dressed more conservatively, more child friendly, family friendly.
Which only makes sense because, and again, if you think that things like that aren't happening, I mean, almost every parent can tell you that they have taken their young children to see something called, you know, the Children's Funtime Band. And if they look a little bleary eyed, it's because the night before they were a punk jazz band, you know, that right. you tailor your appearances to the audience. And in this case, the audience, which was family friendly, would have also heard a family friendly message
yes.
about inclusivity. And if you think that in your little white bread community that there isn't somebody who is, you know, either cross-dressing or somebody who is gay that you'd swear is never gay or whatever the case may be that you don't necessarily agree with, well, you're wrong. It is in your neighborhood and you could either learn to be tolerant of it or you can join the torches and pitchforks crowd, which I would like to think we have grown past that, but apparently we have not. And you know, folks like you still have to deal with the blowback from that.
Yeah, it's disappointing. And then just for it to be so false, like for them to just be straight out lying, and then to have a village board member just repeating that lie, sending it to people on her village email. It's just gross, frankly. And it doesn't make us look like an inclusive and safe place to live.
No, and that's something that you talked about on a previous visit with your run for village president. It was that, you know, there is something happening to the images in our community. And by the way, before you even start to answer that, I'm going to get ahead of this. When a community is starting to look less welcoming because of the actions of some people, and then whether it's you or anybody else calls that out, there's nobody that should be making you out to be, oh, you're the divider. You're telling people that we're not as inclusive. You're sounding the alarm about bad behavior that is threatening to, you know, give a black eye to the whole community.
Exactly. Yeah, it's too bad because it is a good place to live in. Most of the feedback we've gotten has been very positive, very supportive. It's just a handful of very loud people, you know, which is too bad. And then to have leadership acting that way.
Mm-hmm. It is. Well, so if the event is not necessarily going to be taking place, I would imagine that still through your business and through other efforts, you're still going to be helping that group and others in the community.
Yeah, we're trying to just redirect that frustration into coming up with different ideas. So like we had that drag bingo scheduled. We had to open a second drag bingo because that one sold out. And then the next one sold out right away. And we have the other events. We'll have baked goods on sale all month that are pride themed, where a portion will go to Courage MKE as well. And if other people feel frustrated, I would say go donate directly to Courage MKE because they're doing great work.
I think any help for Courage MKE that would be over and above what they were going to get otherwise, again, sends that message to some very hateful people that they're not going to be allowed to win in communities like ours here in Wisconsin. Brittany Wolfhau, thank you so much for joining us again, telling us what was going on. We wish you nothing but success going ahead. Kill them with kindness and right. and best wishes. Keep us in the loop.
Thanks so much.
All right, Brittany, thank you again. It's just about 7:18 now on Up North News Radio. In sports, the Brewers wrapped up a 3-game series at American Family Field against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and Sal Frelick homered for the first time this season as the Brewers beat the Pirates 4-3 last night. Frelick also made 2 diving catches in center field. Joe Ross and 3 relievers combined on a 3-hitter. Reese Hoskins went on the 10-day injured list. Owen Millers came up to play infield. Robert Gasser starts for the Brewers in wrapping up that 3-game series. You can hear the pregame starting at 11:35 this morning on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Oshkosh, and Park Falls. We'll talk about Donald Trump's trial and the interesting number of surrogates who are showing up to help him violate the court's gag order. That's coming up in just a bit, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. This is Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlum. The composer Mike Oldfield is 71 years old today, and he did this song, Tubular Bells, from The Exorcist back in the 1970s. It was one of those movies that, again, I was too young to see. You just knew that it was everywhere, and so it was like, you know, it was a placeholder for horror movies.
Yeah.
Not being a horror movie person myself, I've not watched it. So yesterday I kind of read through the synopsis of it,
Yeah. And
now I'm bothered and can't sleep.
Well, I remember, like, so I was talking to a gentleman at the club last week, and I said, I don't watch horror movies. I can't handle the gore, and it's just not something I do. And I don't dislike them. I don't begrudge those who do enjoy them, but they're just not my jam. But I love doing what you just said, reading the mythology, reading the synopsis, and seeing, like, you know, how, you know, Jason comes back from 2 and ends up in 3, and Michael Myers never dies, and... But I'm just like, I can't watch the movie because I'm a scaredy cat.
Well, yeah, give me the cliff notes.
When The Exorcist came out, people were passing out and other things in the theaters. They had to put up warnings.
They did. It was a troubling. And then when that was all done, they had sharks eating people. The 70s were a great time for movies. See, Tony up in Hayward wanted to let Brittany know, love what you're doing. Greg, I know you guys are going to be discussing the topic as well on Matt and Air on Air.
Well, yeah, actually, we're going to be having Brian Schlaikowski, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. He's the co-founder of Courage MKE. We actually booked him to talk about their gala happening in the fall because it sells out really quick. Then this happened, and I'm like, well, of course we're going to be talking about this now. But yeah, so on Matt and Air on Air today, we will have Brian on the show if you want to tune in later. I believe in the 11 o'clock hour, we will have him on the show to talk about the great things that Courage MKE does. And then, you know, what you do in the face of hate.
And you've told us before that there's another place where Drag Bingo goes on where you can be supportive.
Yes. And yes, at Lakefront Brewery, at least once a month, we sometimes do twice a month. There's a drag queen bingo with Granny Bingo herself, Esther Filone. She's fantastic. It's a great time. It's free to come out. Like free bingo. You have to pay for drinks and food, of course, but you can play for free. Great prizes. And last night, Esther, like in the middle of the second half, or the beginning of the second half of the games, just threw down and spoke about Batter and Mac, spoke about Courage MKE, and said this show will never stop in the face of people who don't want us here. And I was like,
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how it should be done. Great. Thank you. 7:23. Let's turn to the Trump trial, and not so much the trial itself, because we already know that the testimony wrapped up from Michael Cohen for the prosecution, and then the defense began their cross-examination of Cohen, Trump's former attorney slash fixer. The court takes Wednesdays off, and so cross-examination of Cohen will resume tomorrow. But I would like to focus instead on the parade of toadies who were in Manhattan yesterday for the former president of the United States, charged with nearly 100 felonies across four different investigations. And it would be one thing if it's, some no names that were trying to curry favor. I mean, remember, the smarmy Vivek Ramaswamy? Of course, he was there. Iowa's attorney general was there. Alabama's attorney general was there in both states. I think a lot ought to be asked of residents there about their tax dollars and whether this is what their attorneys general are supposed to be doing during business hours. You had the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, there. You had a sitting United States Senator, the Rhodes Scholar Tommy Tuberville of Alabama was there. And the things that those two said, these sitting members of Congress, one of them, second in line for the presidency, were especially noteworthy and repugnant all at the same time. A reporter for the Associated Press called Mike Johnson's appearance a remarkable moment in American politics. The Speaker of the House turning his Republican Party against the federal and state legal systems that are foundational to the U.S. government and a cornerstone of democracy. Johnson, who is second in line for the presidency, called the court system corrupt. This from a sitting Speaker of the House. And they wonder why an increasing number of Americans recognize the Republican Party as being hostile toward democracy. Tommy Tuberville took it a step further and questioned the citizenship of some of the members of the jury. In all cases, they referred to what Trump was going through as unprecedented. Yeah, there has never been a president or former president who, evidence shows, turned out to be engaged in so much criminal activity. That's not a matter of politics. That's a matter of evidence. The evidence has led to four criminal trials. One going on now, three in waiting. And these are elected officials who have chosen to stand with the accused criminal rather than the system that will weigh the evidence and decide whether to convict the accused of crimes or not. Again, that's provided the members of the jury are real Americans, right? Wink. I'm starting to think that instead of a wall to Mexico, or even the wall I joke about with Canada to keep out wildfire smoke. It might be time to build a wall around Washington, D.C., just to keep people in who should be doing their job. Wisconsin Congressman Scott Fitzgerald was the most recent one I noticed, who was again posting from grandstanding at the southern border. When there are things that need to be done in the United States Capitol, there are things the attorneys general of those states could be doing that would require them to work. Instead, they all showed up. And this is the thing that's especially either laughable or embarrassing, in matching suits and Trump red ties. All in matching uniforms. Make your own brown shirt comment from there. You know who wasn't there? Melania. You know who wasn't there? Daughter Ivanka. Other people who Trump has hurt through his actions. They were not there. Instead, you had people that were just craven. They were people crazed with the possibility of power or the proximity to celebrity or whatever you want to call it. But all of it in service of helping undermine the court, helping undermine the court's credibility, but more importantly, helping undermine the court's gag order to prevent the intimidation of witnesses. Donald Trump does not have a gag order against him just because. Not just because, you know, he's a bad guy with a big mouth and a big social media following, but because the things that he does can lead to the intimidation of witnesses, the intimidation of jurors, threats of violence, or actual violence. And when the Speaker of the House and a sitting U.S. Senator say they expressly came for the purpose of helping Trump get around the gag order to say the things that he can't say that would intimidate a jury, that would intimidate witnesses, that would prejudice the future trials, well, that just tells you just how far one political class has sunk in this country. And again, where the right thing to do is not to turn away, not to say, well, I can't be bothered with that. That's everybody. So no, it's to get involved, to vote this November, and vote to finally clean things up. Today's Homeroom segment is next. You're up north. I'm Pat Kreitlaw. Let's talk in our homeroom segment here on Wednesday morning at 7:34 about why we go to school. I mean, there are a whole host of reasons, but one that I think doesn't get mentioned enough is we go to school so that we can have stories to tell to our kids that begin with the phrase, back in my day. You know, back in my day, we didn't have school buses. We had to walk to school 20 miles uphill both ways. It was always snowing. You had to wrestle the same bear every day to and from school. It was rough, and our kids, for some reason, don't believe us. But now the kids today are going to have their own story to tell, and it's going to be, you know, back in my day, our school buses were still powered by fossil fuels, by diesel fuel or gasoline, and, you know, belching the smoke and loud, and their kids aren't going to believe them. But it's true. At least until quite recently, when you started to see a whole new crop of electric school buses showing up in schools around the country, including here in Wisconsin. Selena Heller, Up North News reporter, joined us. Well, she joins us every Monday morning, and I believe it was Monday before last when she introduced us to one Western Wisconsin school district and their school buses. We're going to play her report, and then on the other side, we'll talk live to the superintendent in the Palmyra Eagle Area School District about electric buses showing up at their district and what this means for the future. But first, here's Selena's report.
What's it like to be a school bus driver in Wisconsin?
It's watching the kids grow up, I believe. When you watch them for 6 years, they change quite a bit.
Dan Danzinger has been a school bus driver in the rural community of Mondovi for the last 6 years.
The biggest responsibility is keeping them safe on the bus.
And now he's doing that while driving a new electric school bus.
The bus is running.
I like the electric one a lot. It's like quieter, it's not so loud.
The engine to start it up, all I have to do is push this button over here. The purpose of the engine is to heat the batteries when it's cold.
The school district of Mondovi deployed 5 new electric buses in March after receiving funding from President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law through its Clean Bus Program, which is aimed at replacing old diesel and gas buses in rural districts to reduce emissions.
The undercarriage of this bus is complete batteries from, about here to the back tires.
We look at it as we got 5 new buses and it only cost us $13,000. Normally, if we bought like a regular gas or diesel bus, you're talking a little over $100,000 a piece.
In the area, we're like the first ones to get an electric bus.
Yeah.
So I think that's cool.
What else is cool? A savings of $14,000 in fuel costs and only having to purchase a new transformer. The buses do take a little getting used to, though.
So that's the learning curve, is when to let your foot off the accelerator to put charge back into your battery.
65 new electric school buses will be rolling out across the state in 15 districts.
Change is a little bit different, challenging, but now being in the second week, I'm pretty comfortable that it was the right choice to make.
So that was Selena Heller talking about the bus switch in Mondovi, and joining us live now to talk more about it in the Palmyra Eagle Area School District is Superintendent Dr. Ryan Krohn. Dr. Krohn, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you very much for being a part of this discussion as well about what the students today will be telling their kids and grandkids about the switch. What has been the experience so far in the Palmyra Eagle Area School District? Where are you in terms of turning over the fleet?
Yeah, well, in the beginning of the year, we were notified that the buses, we knew we had the award. We didn't know when the buses were actually going to arrive. And so the buses arrived. We were the first district in Wisconsin. We're a small rural district serving a couple of different communities. And we have 6 buses in total, which is actually our entire fleet. So our entire fleet turned over this year. And we've started now with our electric bus system. It got rolling to the start of the year, but they weren't in operation. It took a couple of months of just some logistics and getting things in order. But they've been running here for the majority of the year. And as you started the program with back in my day, our students would say, we'll have to say back in their day, they went from being able to hear and smell buses to no longer being able to hear and smell buses. That's their quote each morning. They're so quiet, as well as they said you can't smell them anymore. And I think that's a direct quote from a third grader.
Well, that's good change. That's good progress. So can you talk as well about what you're looking at in terms of fuel savings for the district?
Yeah, we're looking. One of the quotes that we heard is about $100,000 in fuel and maintenance savings for the life of each bus that they've talked about. Our quick calculations just on this year with our 6 buses in terms of what our fuel costs were last year and what we anticipate annually, we're looking at about a $30,000 to $40,000 savings annually in fuel savings. And we're looking at offsetting that with some of the overall costs on our electrical grid and what that might be. But we're targeting about $30,000 to $40,000 this year in savings, and hoping to have that annually.
Is that the main reason? Is that the most beneficial reason for folks who might hear this and say, okay, so the bipartisan infrastructure law through the Clean Bus Program is providing all these buses? Is there a payoff? Is there a return on investment for anybody that might show any skepticism about that? How do you respond to those folks?
Yeah, two big costs. First of all, here at Palmyra Eagle Area School District, we are in partnership with Delsman Transport Company. They are our provider. There are some districts in the state of Wisconsin that they own their own buses. We do not. We're in a partnership and agreement with a company, as I mentioned, Delsman Transport. So when the grant came in, we wrote this as a team. And so in this way, the grant that we have, and the EPA grants have changed kind of year to year, different logistics, but the one that we received did cover the cost of the buses as well as some of the infrastructure needs. And so the buses themselves came in at no cost, which can be a direct savings to districts that own their own. And then again, in the fuel and the maintenance department, there's other things in there that provide the savings. So there is it's a chance for districts to stretch their dollars or keep dollars hopefully closer to students and in the classroom with some costs that have sort of operational costs that we're always trying to balance our budget with annually.
I know Selena mentioned something in her report related to winter and driving conditions. So I want to get to that. But I also have a comment on our YouTube page from Tony asking, do the buses have good heaters? I remember freezing in high school and middle school riding the bus before getting my driver's license. So I was going to ask you about winter with the bus operating, you know, and starting up. But, you know, Tony raises a point about the heaters as well.
Yeah, those are great questions. And a traditional bus, if you're the first student getting picked up in the morning, you're usually getting on a cold bus. But with the electric buses, we did find, first of all, it does drain the battery a little bit more. You know, the more heat that you're looking to throw, there's been some issues with that. So we looked at, there's some things that districts have done to retrofit, and there's some other pieces that can come into a bus. So we had to work through some of those challenges, especially on those really, really cold Wisconsin days. We've had a couple milder winters recently, but on some of those cold days, there was a couple initial challenges. It does heat the bus. It does heat the bus real comparable to a traditional diesel bus, but it does drain the battery a little bit more. So we need to be mindful of our routes and our charging solutions in the winter months.
Well, I think it's no different than, you know, the buses that we have now, the time that it takes to either scrape off the windshield or, you know, again, warm up the bus there, that you're going to have winter contingencies. But yeah, let's talk about the range of it. I know Selena had mentioned that, you know, they would still have access to, traditional fueled buses, especially for things like field trips where, or sports trips that did have a longer range. What is it you can tell us about the range of the buses on a typical school day running their routes versus those longer trips that they need, that the kids sometimes need to make?
Yeah. So of the six buses that we have in the routes, our longest route each day is about 57 miles. That would be the morning route as well as an afternoon route. And some of them are much shorter. So we keep an eye on some of that mileage and what kind of driving speeds we're at and things like that. Typically, we don't need to charge our buses. We can do it once a day. But if we get to the spot where we're hitting closer to that 100 miles, anything like that, you might see a midday charge to bring things up to speed. And you're exactly right. When we look at field trips or sporting events or other pieces, right now, the infrastructure that we have, our buses are charged on our school district. So we've installed the chargers at our schools. And so the buses can stay here to be charged daily. But if we were to leave here and go to a sporting event, for example, or a field trip, and it's much further or it takes us out of our range, we would be stuck with sort of an infrastructure problem, making sure we find where additional chargers might be or partnerships. And so now if we took an event up to Mondovi, which I know has some of the electric buses, and we'd have to make sure that the charging systems and the buses are able to do that. But that's a challenge that I think in an infrastructure challenge that probably unfold in the future. We talked about the 65 different buses across Wisconsin. What other solutions are we going to have so that you can continue to move forward with longer trips or day trips or things like that?
Well, sure. And that infrastructure is only going to grow. We've certainly heard Governor Evers and others from the Biden administration and Midwest governors all across the Great Lakes states talking about setting up, you know, more of a charging infrastructure. So there's no doubt that we'll continue to see those opportunities growing. I wanted to ask you as well about any other energy sustainability efforts you might have going on there. We had former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes on 2 weeks ago talking about the Inflation Reduction Act, the funds that are available for energy efficiency, and making sure not only that homeowners know what's available, but also know what school districts have available to them. I'm going to play a little clip of that. It runs just short of 2 minutes, and then I'm going to ask you about energy efficiency, other opportunities for school districts after that. Here again is former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who had chaired the governor's climate change task force.
Now, the frustrating part about it is so many of the recommendations of that task force we're left up to legislative approval. And at this point, we don't have a legislature that seems keen on approving any sort of climate recommendations. But the work is too important for us to just forget about. And one of the things I want to do post-elected life is to be sure that Wisconsin still met our clean energy goals, the clean energy goals that we set while I was in office, having a clean power plan for the very first time. It's going to take some outside help to make that happen. So I started Forward Together Wisconsin. as an organization to assist with the implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act. We've taken a multi-pronged approach to this. One, we've been knocking on doors, talking to folks right at their doorstep about the incentives that they qualify for, things they may not have realized or even thought about, ways to improve efficiency in their own homes and how to save money to actually do that. And you run into so many folks who, one, don't know what the Inflation Reduction Act is, two, have zero idea about how it impacts them, and we're trying to close that access gap. And another thing we're doing is a partnership with the with Green Homeowners United. It is our Green Homes Initiative, because you know many of the incentives for the Inflation Reduction Act are on the back end. It takes a lot of upfront investment to make some of the upgrades. So we've been able to help cover the upfront costs for energy assessments and insulation work for a number of homes. And then finally, we're getting ready to kick off our Green Schools Initiative, helping out schools and school districts, connecting them to the resources they may not have been aware of, especially the lower income school districts that may not, or smaller school districts for that matter, that may not have the business officers with the capacity to be able to apply for some of these grants or research funding opportunities. So to put it very plainly, For Together Wisconsin operates to make sustainable attainable for folks.
Making the sustainable attainable. We're talking to Dr. Ryan Crone from the Palmyra Eagle Area School District. You just heard from former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. It seems like, much like grant writing anywhere, I'm sure you're always looking for opportunities to help fund other energy efficiency improvements in your district.
Yeah. And as I mentioned before, when it came to the bus, we did this in partnership, and we probably wouldn't have been able to do it without partnering with the transportation company, as well as a couple other resources to help us kind of understand that particular EPA grant. But as Mandela Burns was just saying, kind of on the sustainable attainable, that is because we are in this field now, it has opened the doors to a number of conversations of not only like when we installed our chargers on campus, working with local We Energies here and some other across Wisconsin, learn about some of the solar pieces that we could put in to potentially charge our buses and the chargers themselves. It's opened the door to some additional grants. Many school districts have a 10-year capital plan and just trying to forecast out the lifespan of roofing and boilers and other pieces on their facilities. And this has really made a nice shift for us in learning not only about the buses themselves and this grid, but what else we might do. We have more questions now from students, community members, and staff that might be looking at having charging stations up for their own cars, as well as looking at other things that we can do. So, and the grant writing is one of those pieces that we want to continue to make sure that we have a relationship with what's out there and how we can write them.
So that we make a whole new generation of back in my day stories that folks can tell about this exciting era. Dr. Ryan Crone, the district administrator for the Palmyra Eagle Area School District, thank you very much for your time and updating us on the exciting things happening out there.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
It was our pleasure. Coming up next, we'll talk to Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show to find out what's coming up later today after this. You're up north. Here's what you don't get from the Todd Alba Show: secondhand news. He gives you the news straight, and it's why Tony from
New York
gets excited to always talk about the Todd Father, the vibes that we get.
Todd Father. Chef's kiss.
How are you?
I'm well. How about you guys?
Doing well. Yeah, there's good vibes out here, thankfully.
A beautiful day here in the capital city.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Now, it was ugly there in the south wing of the capital there yesterday. Did you catch the end of the state senate session?
I heard a report that there was hollering and gnashing of teeth on the
Hooting
senate
and
floor.
Hollering a brouhaha, a kerfuffle, something like that.
I heard that the Democrats did not want to object to adjournment, and they slammed the old gavel down, and that was the way it ended.
That was the way it ended, which would, probably would have been fine, except to add insult to injury or to rub salt in the wound. Republican leader Devin Lemieux actually told the truth about why they did it, and it was so that one of their members, John Jagler, could catch a flight. He needed to get to the airport. And so let's, you know, deprive the members of the minority, you know, the time that they'd like to debate a bill or to debate a veto override in this case. And again, it's not the world's biggest thing. It's just in the dickishness that perhaps might end with fairer maps, shall we say.
I think you have a lot of nerve horning in on their 10-month vacation, Pat, all right?
I know. They had to come back for a day for a political stunt and leave the water contaminated. But that's how things operate there these days, I guess, Todd.
It is. And I guess, I don't know. What I find interesting is the fact that Devin Lemieux told the truth about that they adjourned a special session in order for a member to catch a flight. But the day before, and I'm not sure I'd give the reporter credit, but I only heard the audio. I didn't see who it was. But on voting, one reporter asked, as the presser was wrapping up, asked Devin Lemieux, so do you agree with President Trump that we should only vote on the day of the election, or with the party chair of the Republican Party, Brian Schimming, to bank your vote, to vote early? I'm not here to talk about that. And he walked away. He doesn't want to talk about the fact. He doesn't want to tell the truth on who he – is it Trump or Schimming? But he does tell the truth that, yeah, we just had to get out of town.
Just the – I'm actually – Todd?
Yes?
I'm going to let it go. We're gonna move really? On to other okay. other matters.
Are
here.
You going
to
shake it off? Say,
Shake it off.
We go. I like that. Mostly because we're just going to jump from one dysfunctional Republican function into the other. And that would be, again, the Speaker of the House attending Donald Trump's trial yesterday, along with a sitting U.S. Senator, though I don't want to give Tommy Tuberville too much credit here. But let's at least keep it to the House Speaker, who, again, is calling a court system corrupt, criticizing the judge in a trial that's going on at that moment. Again, it's the kind of banana republic thing that you would expect only from people who would actually like this to be a banana republic. And that is what Mike Johnson has shown us through his actions previously. It's not that it's out of character. It's just that it is, again, worth note.
I thought one of the most interesting parts of the day was there was a B-roll video of Speaker Johnson following a goose around Central Park practicing his goose step. So I thought that was rather interesting.
Well,
No.
Well, that was way better than the joke I made about them all in matching matching. They all had matching suits and matching Trump red ties. It was just so. Ew.
Well,
it was
in all seriousness, you're right. I mean he didn't know not only the judge, he attacked the judge's daughter for a great offense of having supported or worked for a Democratic candidate, which is just bizarre because, you know, I mean, people are free to do what they want in life, regardless of what their parents' vocation is. So, yeah, I think it's really disturbing that you have the second in line to the presidency, the Speaker of the House, show up in New York to defend a guy at a criminal trial, and having the legislative branch now interfering or attempting to persuade the judicial branch in this country. It's a complete violation of separation of state, or at least the ethos of that, in my opinion. And it's not a good day for America.
Todd, that's what a good Christian does, is goes and defends a man in a criminal trial, like Mike Johnson.
Thank you for bringing that up. Liz Cheney pointed that out, right? I mean, Liz Cheney, Jamie Raskin,
they both had just a great take on this guy who says the Bible is his worldview, Speaker Johnson, you know, attending the trial for, you know, an adulterous, you know, adjudicated, you know,
rapist paying money to a porn star. Johnson's son that's his porn partner. Maybe Trump is too, and his phone was going off. I got to show up because, the president's phone is going off.
Could be. Who's to say? One more thing along political themes, and it has less to do with Wisconsin, but there was a Democratic Senate primary in Maryland yesterday. And I don't I don't know the candidates, but as I read this observation about polling for the race, I just want every Wisconsin news consumer and voter to keep this in mind. And it goes like this. Do you need more evidence to doubt the reliability of polling? Take a glance at the Democratic Senate primary in Maryland. Trone, one of the candidates, was leading in 99% of pre-election polls and maintained a 2-point advantage in the overall average. Yet in the actual election results, also Brooks led by 10 points. Moral of the story? Polling is broken. Hard work and the quality of a candidate still matters, as does the reporting done by journalists and talk show hosts. Stop putting so much emphasis on polling. It is not what it used to be.
Well, I just saw it yesterday online. I got a credit reporter, if I can remember who it was. I can't. But they had a headline from 1988. This month, in May of 1988, that said, Michael Dukakis leads George Bush by 10 points going into the summer. And we all know what happened there.
So that was, I forget if that was put, it was either put up by our friend Mark Jacob or it was reposted by him. But I did see that yesterday. Again, a reminder, the polls mean so much less than nothing at this point in the game.
And I think, and I'm sorry, because I literally just heard this like 10, 15 minutes ago, what you're referring to, these primaries yesterday. It was West Virginia and Maryland and another state. And in West Virginia and Maryland, the two Republicans who won those primaries had either served time, one of them served 6 months for January 6th, and the other one was charged at least with January 6th violations, and they won. You had to have insurrectionists in the Republican Party winning U.S. Senate primaries.
This is where we are, folks, and it's why you should be listening to Todd Alba later this afternoon.
And Pat Kreitlow. And I have a little whiskey in your coffee this morning. It'll make you feel